Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Scrolling down to the comments section of almost any video or website on a news site, you'll invariably find vile comments. The phenomenon of trolling, as it's commonly known, has become ubiquitous. People have written dissertations and introduced legislation to deal with it. Today's guest, feminist writer Lindy West, says dealing with online harassment and insults is just part of her everyday job. On an episode of This American Life last January, she confronted one of her most persistent trolls. I remember hearing that piece like it was yesterday. It was one of those radio moments that make you stop everything you're doing and really listen. Lindy West joins me in studio today to talk about what it's like to come of age in a popular culture that is still very hostile to women, especially fat, funny women, and how keeping quiet is just not an option. Lindy West is a Seattle-based writer, editor, and performer whose work focuses on pop culture, social justice, humor, and body image. She's currently a culture writer for GQ magazine and a weekly columnist with The Guardian. She's also founder and editor of I Believe You, It's Not Your Fault. That's an advice blog for teens. Lindy is author of the forthcoming memoir, Shrill, Notes from a Loud Woman. And Lindy West will be a guest on Kamau Right Now tonight at 7 o'clock. You can hear the show live on KALW, or you can be part of the live audience at the Swedish American Hall in San Francisco. Tickets are still available, and you can find information at kalw.org. And Lindy West joins me in studio. Hi, Lindy. Thanks for coming in.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
You know, when we got word that you were coming to town, I thought, Lindy, that sounds familiar. And then I remembered the This American Life episode, and I remember it like it was yesterday. I just get the chills even thinking about it. It was such a powerful segment.
Thank you so much. That means a lot. Thank you.
So give us a little bit of background about how this happened, because the Guardian story that you wrote about this experience got shared something like 90,000 times. This really resonated with a lot of people.
Yeah, it was really surprising to me how far it went and how many people still bring it up with me. You know, that it came out a year ago, and they just reran it, so that you know, piqued interest again,
right?
But you know, it's been pretty steady all year. People, it really, really resonates with people. I think because I don't know, maybe just the way that people treat each other sometimes is just feels like an impossible mystery. You know, why are people so cruel to each other?
Right.
In so many different areas. And so I think to at least appear to come up with some kind of answer makes people feel a lot of things.
Well, and also what was amazing about that, and we'll play a clip, there was so much humanity to all of this. I mean, you hear about these mean comments, but to hear the voice of the guy who actually left you these horrific comments by creating a Twitter account of your father who just passed away, that's really intense.
Yeah, I mean, you know, dehumanization is at the root of a lot of this issue. The reason that guy was able to do that, because he's a normal guy. I mean, he's a seemingly normal guy. He has a normal life. He has relationships with normal people. And so for that person, who could be anyone that you know, anyone who works in your office or whatever, for him to be able to bring himself to do something so beyond the boundaries of normal human interaction, he had to dehumanize me to a certain point. He had to convince himself that I wasn't a real person, or that I was distant enough, and that the internet created this barrier between real life and the internet or, you know, and our online interactions, that it wouldn't, which is also confusing, because clearly he wanted to get to me, but there's this distancing. So what I wanted to do, I didn't feel like I had any choice but to try to humanize him in that piece and to figure out who he is. Because really, people pretend that the internet's not real life, but it is. It's just people. It's just a way for people to communicate. It's just a communication tool.
So let's give listeners a backstory, because while the online harassment is horrific and we've lost so many amazing writers because of it, there are now so many incredible feminist writers like yourself who have columns in mainstream publications. There are great feminist blogs. There's just such a rich dialogue online. So tell us, when did you start writing about feminist issues?
Well, you know, I was a film critic for a long time. That's where I started. And over time, it became clearer and clearer to me that I couldn't keep politics out of my film reviews. Just as a woman consuming media, it's impossible to not, you know, bring your own perspective to it and think, what is this piece of media saying about me? What is it telling me about myself? What is it telling other people about how to treat me and how to think of me, you know, especially as a woman who's not thin and who doesn't look like the way women are presented in movies and TV. So over the years, and I did that for about 7 years, I did that job for a weekly newspaper in Seattle called The Stranger. And over the years, I just became more and more outspoken and more sort of implicitly feminist in my writing. And then I got hired at Jezebel specifically to be a feminist voice. And then I was like, okay, I'm gonna do this. And so then I was there for, I think, 2 or 3 years, starting in 2012. I guess it was only 2 years, but two and a half. And so at once I was at Jezebel, it was just all feminism all the time, which was a really, really empowering and really great learning experience.
And at that point, did you know much about online trolling?
You know, I had gotten it at The Stranger, but the readership is so much smaller when you're working for a regional publication than when you go national that I didn't really understand. And, you know, Twitter was new. I wasn't really on Twitter yet at that time. So it was just like, you know, I would write a movie review and then there would be a couple comments that were like, you're fat, you know, but it's just, and that was jarring and weird, but it's not anything like getting an onslaught of hate on Twitter or even in the comments of a Jezebel piece where it can, you know, get into the thousands of comments. When you're just being inundated with rage, it's a really different experience. So I had no idea what was coming.
Did it happen right away? Was it a certain subject?
I mean, that's a great question. It's in a certain way. If you're a woman, there's kind of nothing that you can write or do that won't potentially bring you some kind of misogynist backlash from men. But for me, the stuff that I think really riled people up against me is anytime you write something about, hey, men, maybe you could do this thing differently, you know, or writing about being fat is a huge, you know, I call it just catnip for trolls. I mean, they just freak out. If you write, you know, hey, I don't hate myself. Please leave me alone. they just go bananas. So I would say anything that's writing about gender roles, anything that implies that maybe men aren't 100% perfect and wonderful in the way that they treat women and think about women, anything that indicts men directly, and anything about fat bodies not being garbage really brings them out.
So for people who aren't familiar with how intense this is, give us an example of what happens when you get hit with trolls. I mean, how bad is it?
Oh, and, you know, I want to say also, I'm just speaking from my experience as a fat white woman. Mm-hmm. I mean, people of color who write about racism, I mean, they get this from a million directions that I don't experience. And also, like, sex workers who write about, you know, there's just so many different identities that get hatred from people that leave me alone. So I just wanted to mention that I don't mean to imply that being a fat white lady is the worst, because it's not.
Oh, but yeah. The things reading around Black Lives Matter, I mean, it was just, some of it was so hard to read.
Yeah. 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 But yeah, so when you're at the heart of one of these, so what happens is there are, especially on Twitter, harassment is becoming like incentivized. Like, there are groups of people who do this recreationally, and there are trolls, and I hesitate to use the word troll anymore. I'm trying to move away from it, because really what we're talking about is abuse and harassment and stalking. But there are people with a lot of followers who will pick a target and send their followers to just descend upon them, and it's just relentless. So basically, you can't, you open your, and I use social media as part of my job, and also I'm sorry, I should be allowed to be a part of the world, you know? Because people say, well, just close your computer. Like, well, I work in my computer. And also, why don't you close your computer? Why don't you leave me alone? So yeah, you know, it's just really, really overwhelming to open your laptop and log into Twitter and have just a wall of hate and really personal, really scary things. Like, you know, if as a feminist writer, I write about rape culture, so then, you know, rape is brought in to every tweet in a way that is very clearly trying to scare me. And this happens to women all the time, all over the internet. And there's often a kind of plausible deniability to it where, you know, people say, well, I didn't say anything overtly threatening. Like, no, but you're part of, you know, 1,000 people who all sent me an aggressive message on the same day. As part of a coordinated attack where someone decided that we're going to try to shut this feminist up. So to me, and that's part of the problem with Twitter trying to crack down on this stuff is that it's really difficult to take that context into account. Because if you report some of these individual tweets that just say, like, you know, shut up, you're fat, you know, that in itself on its own is not particularly threatening. It's when you get 1,000 of those in a day that you're like, whoa. And it's exhausting and it's distracting. It keeps me from doing my work. Also, another major part of it is that this is my beat now. And I used to be a movie critic, you know? I don't want to write about online harassment anymore. I'm tired of talking about it.
Well, and I asked you that when you first got here because I was excited to meet you because that piece just left such an impression on me. And I said, Lindy, are you sick of talking about this? But it's really important to talk about.
It's really important. And, you know, I'm sick of talking about it, you know, in the sense that I have other interests.
Yeah.
But it's very, very important to me. And I'm tired of watching my colleagues be abused. And I'm tired of watching, you know, new young women come into this industry and be blindsided by it. It's really, really tragic.
We did a show about this, I don't know, 6 or 8 months ago, and people are writing their thesis on this. Mm-hmm. There's so much out there. And at the time, it was really disturbing because so many important voices have left. They shut down their computer. They shut down their accounts. What has really changed as a result of this issue getting so much attention?
I don't know. I mean, there was something happened last week where, so there's a big online hate movement that's been going on for about a year and a half called Gamergate, which I hesitate to even mention it because they hear you and then they descend. But, you know, the woman who was at the center of this is a woman named Zoe Quinn, and she wrote a post last week that said, I forget the details, but she had a lawsuit against the guy who had started this movement. And she said, you know, I'm dropping it. Like, she was like, it's not, there is no recourse. The way that she was being treated in court because for not being the ideal victim, for not, you know, for, you should go, her piece is really long and really fascinating and really sad. You know, like you call the police don't know what Twitter is. The judge doesn't know what Twitter is. It's just the system, there's no good way to deal with it. And so I think the fact that we're talking about this and the fact that people are starting to do academic work on it, I know that at least Twitter has at least paid lip service to the idea of trying to fix it, but it's going to be a long, slow process. But at least I guess I have to say that the fact that we're talking about it is encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that for women who are really and I mean, Zoe Quinn has gotten it so much worse than I have. And that's hard for a lot of people to imagine because I know that my life is hard for people to imagine. And there are women who are just absolutely drowning in this. And another thing is people like Zoe and me have gotten Twitter's attention. Women who are just who don't have a prominent platform and who no one has heard of them and they maybe have 47 followers. Those women are still getting ground up and ignored. You know, I when I report someone, Twitter pays attention. I think Zoe has generally experienced the same thing, but really women who don't have that kind of institutional support are still, in the same spot.
We have kind of a related question from Delmore in Oakland, who says so much online media is driven by people who define themselves by being against someone else. When the trolls freak out, do they end up drawing more attention to what you're saying?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, although it's really hard to have a substantive conversation in that context. I don't know. And I don't know who's listening to the trolls. it's hard for me to say that that's constructive in any way.
Today I'm speaking with Lindy West. She's a Seattle-based writer, editor, and performer. Her work focuses on, in addition to this issue, pop culture. She writes about politics, social justice, body image. She's a culture writer for GQ magazine and a weekly columnist for The Guardian. She's coming out with a new memoir, Shrill, Notes from a Loud Woman. And if you're free tonight, she will be a guest on Kamau Right Now at the Swedish American Hall. It's at 7 o'clock. Find ticket information at KALW.org. You can also hear the show live on KALW. And if you'd like to join us, if you have any questions for Lindy about what it's like to be a feminist writer today, what has really changed? We've got so many feminists now writing for mainstream publications. A lot of these issues are getting a lot more attention. 866-798-8255. We'll spend maybe 10 more minutes on the troll abuse part of this, but we'll definitely move on and talk about some of Lindy's other writings. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. So I think this is important because you did have a conversation with the guy who was abusing you. And at your Guardian piece, What Happened When I Confronted My Cruelest Troll, you write, there was my dad's dear face twinkling out at me from my Twitter feed. Someone, bored apparently with the usual angles of harassment, had made a fake Twitter account purporting to be my dead dad, featuring a stolen, beloved photo of him for no reason other than to hurt me. What was it like when you woke up to that?
It was jarring. It was, you know, I was used to this online abuse at that point, and that was a level beyond that I had never expected. And you know, what's kind of sad is when I wrote that piece and when This American Life came out, and when I even mentioned that to people a couple years ago, people were, you know, uniformly shocked and dismayed. And now that's happened to me 6 more times.
Really?
Yeah. I've had to report 6 more accounts pretending to be my dad. And it feels mundane now. And they're moving on to, you know, newer and even more horrifying things. You know, it's these things become normalized really fast when you move that line of what's acceptable. There was the thing about this, about trolling, that's so upsetting is that I don't mind if people want to critique my work, if we want to have a conversation about my work. My work is controversial. My work is deliberately pushing against the status quo. And so I understand that people will have problems with that. But when you take it so far into my personal life in a way that's clearly intended to harm me, harm my mental health, harm me emotionally, it's a different thing. And it's really, really, it's frightening to see someone abandon the social contract so completely. Because that's not how human beings treat each other. That's not how, certainly not how I treat the people that I write about, even the people that I am most critical of. I still respect their humanity, and I would, you know, it's a different universe of cruelty.
Well, I think the clip also says something about the people who do the abusing. And so let's hear a clip. This is a clip from This American Life. It ran last January and ran again recently, of Lindy West talking to the guy who abused her and made a fake Twitter account purporting to be her dead father.
What exactly did I do?
Well, it revolved around one issue that you write about a lot, which was your being heavy.
Uh-huh.
The struggles you had regarding being a woman of size, or whatever the term may be.
You can say fat. That's what
fat.
I say.
Okay, fat.
I write a lot about body image, about the stigma and discrimination that fat people face, about being a fat woman. He told me that at the time, he was about 75 pounds heavier than he wanted to be. He hated his body. He was miserable. And reading about fat people, particularly fat women, accepting and loving themselves as they were, infuriated him for reasons he couldn't articulate at the time.
When you talked about being proud of who you are and where you are and where you're going, that kind of stoked that anger that I had.
Okay, so you found my writing. You found my writing, and you did not like it.
Certain aspects of it.
Yeah.
You used a lot of all caps. You're just a very... You almost have no fear when you write.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you stand on the desk and you say, this is, I'm Lee West and this is what I believe, and, you know, f*** you if you don't agree with me. And I, even though you don't say those words exactly, I'm like, who is this bitch who thinks she knows everything?
I asked him if he felt that way because I'm a woman.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Women are being more forthright in their writing. You know, they're not, there isn't a sense of timidity to when they speak or when they write. They're saying it loud. And I think that, and I think for me as well, it's threatening at first.
Right. You must know that that's why I do that. Because people don't expect to hear from women like that. And I want other women to see me do that, and I want women's voices to get louder.
I understand. I understand. Here's the thing. I work with women all day, and I don't have an issue with anyone. I could have told you back then, if someone had said to you, to me, oh, you're a misogynist, you hate women. And I could say, nah, I love my mom, I love my sisters. You know, I've loved the girlfriends that I've had in my life. But you can't claim to be okay with women and then go online and insult them, you know, seek them out to harm them emotionally.
And that is a clip from This American Life. Today's guest, Lindy West, had a conversation with a guy who abused her online. He made a fake Twitter account purporting to be her dead father. That was so intense to hear on so many levels, because he talked about how you were threatening. He was angry at you because you didn't hate yourself. It was like he didn't like you because you're a happy person.
Mm-hmm.
It just brings up so many issues about the relationship between men and women.
Yeah, you realize really quickly, and this has been tremendously therapeutic for me to know, that happy people don't do this. The people who do this are deeply, deeply unhappy. And I am happy, you know? It makes you feel pity instead of pain. Mm-hmm. And that's been really incredibly helpful to me over the past few years. But at the same time, I don't mean to excuse that behavior, you know? I'm sorry that that you don't like your life. It's not my problem. Please leave me alone. But, you know, it's... Ideally, I don't want these people to be punished. I don't want them to feel more pain. I want them to get better.
Mm. You also asked this question, why is it so satisfying to hurt women online? What did that conversation, what kind of answers did that conversation give to you?
I don't think he had a very good answer for that, because I think it's kind of an intangible thing. It comes from the way that misogyny is built into our culture, and the way that young men are trained to think about women as sort of secondary to their own desires and their own, you know, needs. And I think that it's just women are presented as things for men to leverage to feel okay. So I don't know that he knew how to articulate that, but that was essentially what I got from it. My troll is a kind of a miraculous human being. Like we didn't know how that interview was going to go when I got in touch with him and when I pitched the story to This American Life. So the fact that he was so articulate and had clearly thought about this stuff in a really deep way was amazing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there were some things about it that he was still kind of like, I don't know. That's just where my unhappiness took me. you know.
Are you still in touch with him, or do you ever hear from him?
Yeah, he emails me once in a while. I actually need to email him back. I've been he wrote me around the new year and said, just, I mean, we're not friends, you
right.
know. I don't want to have a close relationship with him, but you know, he sends me little updates once in a while and just says I'm doing well, and I'm really happy for him. I'm really proud of him in a weird way.
Well, and I wondered how this experience affected him as a man and his views of women, especially women who have very strong opinions and are sharing them in the media.
My impression is that it was a really positive experience for him. You know, again, we haven't talked in depth at all, but he just sends me little emails once in a while giving me an update on his life and how he's doing. And he seems to be doing really, really well. And I think last time I heard from him, he said he was considering talking to his family and his girlfriend about, because he was keeping this a secret. Hmm. You know, when we talked on the radio, he said he wasn't sure if he was going to tell his girlfriend, and he didn't know how his family would react. But last time he emailed me, he said, you know, I think I'm ready to talk to the people in my life about this. And because he doesn't really have anything to be ashamed of at this point, you know, like he fixed it. He atoned for it. And he, I think, really reckoned with what he did and became a better person.
Did you hear from any other men who were positively affected by this?
Oh, yeah. I mean, mostly just I heard from a lot of people who said I had no idea. I had no idea what women go through online. I had no idea, you know, because my male colleagues certainly get hate and criticism and all kinds of garbage. and sometimes they get similarly egregious treatment. But I think there's just a level of sexualized, violent, relentless hatred that women get that a lot of men weren't aware of. And I've heard from a lot of men who say, you know, I'm going to talk to my male peers about this and make sure that men are speaking out about it, and it's not just women who are having to bear the brunt of this conversation and bear the responsibility for fixing it.
Lindy West is a Seattle-based writer, and again, that This American Life piece aired last January, and recently Lindy confronts one of her most horrific abusers online. And you can find a link to that piece. I hope you can listen to the entire segment at yourcallradio.org. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
Your call is better when you get involved. If you have a question, idea, or experience to contribute to today's conversation, call 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. Toll-free number. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment at the show's website. Set a bookmark for yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 from the BBC, World Have Your Say. Stay with us here on Local Public Radio with a world perspective, KALW, San Francisco.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We'll be discussing coverage of Justice Antonin Scalia's death. How are the media reporting on his legacy and influence on the Supreme Court's major decisions affecting abortion, voting rights, money and politics, and labor? We will also discuss coverage of the worsening humanitarian crisis in Syria. And then next week, we are putting shows together about the best hikes in the Bay Area. We are still praying for rain, but the weather's been incredible the last couple days. We'll also get an update on the water crisis in Flint, Michigan, and find out why this happened and what's to come for so many people who still are relying on filters. We'll also do a show about Turkey next week. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today I'm joined by Lindy West. She is a Seattle-based writer and performer. She's a culture writer with GQ magazine. She writes a weekly column with The Guardian. She's founder of I Believe Believe You, It's Not Your Fault, an advice blog for teens. And she's author of the forthcoming memoir, Shrill, Notes from a Loud Woman. She'll be a guest on Kamau Right Now tonight at 7 if you're free. There are still tickets. It's taking place at the Swedish American Hall. You can also tune in to KALW.org. And if you'd like to join us, if you have any questions, we'll take more questions if you have them about online abuse. If you've experienced it, how do you think companies should deal with it, legal authorities should deal with it? But also, we're going to talk with Lindy about some of the other topics that she writes about, including the case of Daniel Holtzclaw. This is the Oklahoma City police officer who was charged with 36 counts. He faced 36 counts. He was found guilty on 18 of rape. And this case did not really get much media attention until the ruling came down. She also writes about hashtag shout your abortion because I'm not sorry and I will not whisper. So what are your thoughts about feminist writing? There's so much more of it now in the mainstream. How do you think it's changed the conversation about these issues? 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from KDF in Oakland. Hi, KDF. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Rose. Hi, Lindy West. I sent you a letter. I wrote it on the 11th of August, and I sent it to you in care of the Guardian, but I don't know if you got it, and I'd like to know where you want me to send it. Maybe you could tell them off air or something, but it's actually about 700 years of the public silencing of women that started with the murder in Alexandria of Hypatia. She's the one who figured out what Kepler figured out 1,000 years before he figured it out. And then women were silenced publicly until Hildegard of Bergenen. And I just want to applaud you. And I never understood how come porn equals sex and sex equals humiliation. You know, I don't understand why humiliating other human beings is such a good idea. And the other thing I'll say before I stop is when the Charlie Hebdo massacre happened, you had cities all over the world coming out saying that people had the right to speak. And yet, where are those same organizers? Where are the men who find it's important for us to have freedom of speech when we're talking about a woman's right to speak? I think we should have a monthly rally in every American city about it. And I don't understand why your colleagues, I can't use the inner tube because of my neurology, but I don't understand why your colleagues are not out there dealing with this.
Well,
you don't have to.
Thank you, KDF. We've done a lot of shows about men's groups who are doing positive things on these issues.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that there is, there could be more attention paid to the fact that the way that women are treated online is a silencing tactic. And because when you speak out against online harassment, I get called an enemy of free speech all the time because I'm trying to suppress people who just want to call me fat, as though that's the free speech issue. But the free speech issue is women, and other vulnerable minorities being driven off, of the internet and being driven out of, these public spaces where we need to be heard. So thank you so much.
Thank you for calling. Leslie writes, I got the tiniest taste of trolls after This American Life did a story on a play that I wrote that was about gentrification in San Francisco. It was an original musical produced by and for children, and I was accused of brainwashing my students. Hearing Lindy's This American Life piece was such a source of comfort, as was the SNL skit with Melissa McCarthy, the comments section. It was hilarious. I haven't seen that. Have you?
I don't think I have.
I'll have to look that up. Leslie goes on to say that This American Life story about our play also sent a deluge of positive comments and opportunities. I hope the same is true for the fabulous Lindy.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you for writing in, Leslie. And let's go to our next caller, Lisa in Oakland. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I also want to thank you for your bravery. And I'm really sorry that you had to deal with this stuff. But I can't say I am surprised. But, you know, when I listened to the This American Life, I was also blown away. And one thing that blew me away was that you were so open to talking to this guy, and then the fact that he seemed to be so self-aware. And at the end, I almost felt sorry for him.
Yeah.
So it made me kind of, like, on the one hand, feeling like, well, how do we think about changing these guys? And I know that's not necessarily our job, but, you know, when activists generally think, we think of patriarchy, we think of misogyny, we think of, you know, these huge systems, which are very important, and yet you, in some ways, were more effective by having this one-on-one conversation with this guy, and we're, you know, like being his therapist in a sense, taking care of him in the same way that, which is ironic, right? Because that's exactly, I think, what these, a lot of these guys are upset about, that they're afraid, they're sort of upset about their dependence on women.
Mm-hmm.
And they're ashamed of their dependence on women because it might make them look weak, you know, but maybe, you know, in the same way, because they're, you know, they all come from mothers, right? And, you know, so, I mean, it's, and then you had to turn around and actually, in some sense, be a mother for him and, you know, mother him so he could, you know, open up about his pain.
Mm-hmm.
So on the one hand, I was extremely angry that you were being forced to be put in that position again. And on the other hand, I'm like, well, this was rather effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think you can split the difference. You know, I certainly don't think that the solution to online harassment is women coddling and being kinder and more accommodating to the men who are perpetrating this abuse, because that's no kind of solution and incredibly frustrating and a lot of work, a lot of emotional labor for women to take on. But I do think that you can tell your story. I think storytelling is really powerful. That's what I wrote this story. I talked to this one man and we broadcast the story to millions of people. And that really, really got through. And so I think you can use individual stories and these little instances of kindness and understanding to change these larger systems. So, you know, I would never tell anyone who's on the receiving end of this kind of business to go out and be kind and coddle and hug and mother and nurture the men who are doing this because it's just not realistic. It's not, they didn't earn it. They didn't earn your respect. They didn't earn your kindness. But for me to be able to turn that into a bigger piece that I could send out into the world and change people's perspectives, that was really effective, really effective tool.
And giving the rest of us an understanding of why this is happening,
mm-hmm.
that there's some deep, deep pain and deep issues that a lot of people have as they're watching women just fly by and have these big platforms and are able to say what we want.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, my mom's generation, none of this was going on. I mean, this is in one generation we've seen these changes.
And that's the root of the frustration where,
right.
you know, these men who feel like their lives aren't going anywhere see women succeeding and being loud and bold. And there's this idea of, there's this entitlement of like, well, I should have that. You know, I'm supposed to be important and I'm supposed to be heard. Why are these women being heard?
Lisa brings up another interesting point about, you know, how serious should we take this? Because when I read about the group that wanted to make rape legal, they planned worldwide anti-women events in 43 countries. I saw the headline and I just went right past it. Didn't want to read about it. But, you know, how serious should we take these various groups?
I mean, it's tough. You know, that particular group is...
You wrote about this.
I did write about it. I'm very familiar with them and their quote-unquote work. You know, they're clowns. They're ridiculous. They're not to be taken seriously. You know, and the piece about legalizing rape was really like a thought experiment about blaming women for their own rape. What the guy said was that, oh, if we just make rape legal on private property, then women will be more careful about who they go home with. And then he tried to claim it was satire when it's clearly not satire. That's a real suggestion that guy is making. But anyway.
And so his name is Roosh and he runs a group named Return of Kings.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that is a bunch of, very entitled, very miserable young men who feel like, they've been cheated out of the subservient women that they deserve. And so as a body, as a group of people, they are ineffectual and nothing. But what I find, if we wanted to identify something dangerous about them, it's that those ideas, the ideas that group promotes, are a crystallization of attitudes that are very prevalent. So it's a pickup artistry group, which means that they teach men how to get women to have sex with them. And their tactics are things like, oh, insist on walking her home and then ask if you can use the bathroom in her apartment so that when you're in her apartment and then it'll be harder for her to say no. Like, it's very coercive. It's like, don't take no for an answer. No means try harder. So these ideas and teaching these ideas to young men as acceptable forms of seduction, they call it seduction, actually does have a tangible impact on the way that women are treated by men. So this is an extreme group, but ideas like that, I mean, that's in every romantic comedy. Mm. Oh, just don't believe her when she says no, just try harder. That's cast as romance. So, you know, I think that Return of Kings is a bunch of, you know, fools, and they're ineffectual and have no impact on the world, except they represent attitudes that really, you know, every man that you know has been raised to believe that persistence is romance.
Do we know how many followers they have, or how many active followers they have?
I don't know. I'm sure someone knows. It's probably in the tens of thousands, you know, mm-hmm. which is relatively small in the scheme of the world.
You wrote a piece for The Guardian about this because this group actually attacked you.
Oh, yeah. All the time. For years.
And Roosh actually canceled these gatherings because he, quote, can no longer guarantee the safety or privacy of the men who want to attend, end quote.
Right. And we don't know how much of that is theatrics, how much of that, you know, was planned, like, oh, let's have this outrageous meetup and publicize it. And then when people are outraged, then we will, you know, dramatically cancel because we're afraid. I don't know how much of that was orchestrated and how much was honest, but I really don't care what they do with their lives. What I care about is, on a broader scale, the attitudes of how we treat women, whether or not we believe women when they say no, how men feel entitled to women's time and attention and bodies.
And also where this comes from. And you can look at Hollywood, because one of your recent pieces is called Female Characters Should Be More Than Athletic But Sexy, 28. You write about a Twitter feed that lays bare the abysmal way women are described in film scripts. This relentless cultural messaging shapes female identity. So tell us about this film producer, Ross Putman.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know much about him as a person, but he's been tweeting female character introductions that he comes across in scripts. So they're just, when you read through all of them in a row, as a block, it's just so depressing. It's, you know, every single one is like, a scientist but sexy, you know, like, oh, she's pretty, but she's got an attitude. Like, and all of them are like late 20s, you know, buxom, but with glasses.
I mean, this sounds so 50s. You know,
yeah.
Jane, his wife, 30s, beautiful, wearing lingerie, applies lipstick in front of a mirror, making it into an erotic show. Jane, 28, athletic but sexy and natural beauty. Most days she wears jeans and she makes them look good. I mean, this is happening in 2016.
Right. I mean, every single one of them contains some reference that places the character in a spectrum sexually. Here's how you should feel about this character sexually. And that's just not how we describe men. Because I'm sure they do. I mean, of course there are character descriptions for older women too, but I'm sure it's like 50s, you know, motherly, dowdy, not, you know, there's always something about, is this a sexually viable person, or is this, you know, garbage? It's just the way that women are treated as such a binary, like, oh, are you worthwhile and sexual, like worth having sex with, or are you nothing? And it's just, men get to be people, and women are bodies first and then people second.
Lindy West is a Seattle-based writer. You can check out her columns at The Guardian. And if you're free tonight, I hope you can go to the Kamau Right Now show at the Swedish American Hall. You can also listen to it live on KALW at 7 o'clock. Find ticket information and Lindy's writings at yourcallradio.org. And if you want to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. If you have any questions for Lindy or comments about her work, We'd love to hear from you. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's go next to Robert in Richmond. Hi, Robert. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you very much. And, Lindy, thank you very much. I never heard that piece, although I listened to American Life a lot, but I'll go find it, the whole piece. I'm a 66-year-old man, and so consequently I grew up before, obviously, any women such as yourself or had the courage, perhaps even the consciousness, to talk the way you are about truth, the truth of men and women's relationships. What interests me, or what I'm curious about as a man my age, are there places where there are dialogues online between men, women of all sorts, sexualities and sizes, about this kind of thing? Because I've watched it since the 60s when I was in college. And I think it's a big function of, obviously, the commercial culture that we sell products in this country by sexuality and body size and all of the attributes we're just talking about. But if we could get out of that kind of straitjacket and realize that that's an artificial mode, we'd change a lot of things in this culture. I mean, certainly the relationships between men and women, but also a lot of the way in which the economy function, because it's not obviously a coincidence that every time you turn on the TV, there's a very traditionally attractive woman selling you whatever it is they're selling you. So I just wondered, A, do you know those kind of sites? And B, do you see this as applying to more aspects of the culture than just, I mean, certainly it's important, but more than just the way that men and women are treating each other?
Thank you, Robert.
You know, I that's a great question. I don't know specifically of communities where people are having those conversations. I'm sure there are many. Maybe people could tweet if they have suggestions mm-hmm. for places. I mean, what you want to look for are places where comments are moderated, because otherwise, when you try to have those conversations, you're just inundated with trolls. And yeah, absolutely. I think that capitalism has a lot to do with the way that men and women treat each other mm. and the way that we conceive of ourselves. So yeah, I absolutely agree.
Well, thank you for the call. I want to talk about a piece you wrote about Daniel Holtzclaw, the Oklahoma City police officer who was recently found guilty on 18 charges, rape in the first degree guilty, forcible oral sodomy guilty. The jury recommended a sentence of more than 200 years in prison. And as you point out in your piece, he was able to really get away with a number of sexual assaults until Black Americans, particularly Black women, dragged his case into the media. And I remember over the holidays reading about this and thinking, why is this the first time that I've read this story?
Yeah. Yeah, that story was really interesting because it brought together a lot of the major stories that I followed in 2015, police brutality, Black Lives Matter. And so for the way that Black women really just insisted that that story be told was really, really inspiring and really important.
And the women that he assaulted and raped also stood up, particularly a Black grandmother. A lot of people are saying if she weren't the one that came out and spoke out, maybe this case wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, you know, we have so many really, really dangerous notions about good victims and bad victims and who we listen to, mm-hmm. who we care about and who we don't. And, it's a miracle that people finally listened. It's really, really difficult for survivors to tell their stories, particularly if they come from marginalized communities who aren't normally listened to and who don't, aren't given credibility by the mainstream.
You report that 97% of rapists are never punished. This is according to the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network. How do you feel now that you have this platform? I mean, you're writing for GQ magazine, which I'm sure is a lot different from writing for The Guardian. But when you sit down to write, there's so much to think about, so much to write about. How do you focus? What's that process like?
It's really hard. That's such a good question. I have to pitch a column today. I have to write a Guardian column today. And it's like, there's so much to write about and yet also so little. Like, I find myself writing the same stories over and over again because these issues don't get resolved. Hmm. I mean, how many times have I written an article that just says, treat fat people like human beings, or listen to women when they say they were sexually assaulted? I mean, it's just the same issues come up. And I, they have been for for centuries, I assume, you know, and will continue. But it feels like you have these sort of incremental victories. So we move forward slowly. We change the culture a tiny bit. We shift people's language, the way that people, you know, talk about these issues. And I've seen some of those changes in my lifetime, which is really encouraging, you know.
I love that you're writing for GQ. I'm not really familiar with this magazine, and there's a bunch of good-looking men on the website cover. And so what is it like? I mean, what's your audience? What kind of reaction have you received from GQ readers?
Oh, you know, that's really fun. When I was writing my book, I took a hiatus, so I'm just about to get back into doing some GQ stuff. But for them, I mostly just do pop culture, which is a really fun outlet, because for The Guardian, it's usually very serious. I write about politics. So, you know, at GQ, I get to write goofy jokes about movies and TV and celebrities. And it's, the audience is, I think, mostly men, mostly young men. And it's nice to be, because even my pop culture writing always has feminism in it, and it feels very sort of sneaky and powerful to be able to slip these messages into funny. I mean, humor is a really powerful tool. You can really grab people with humor, and then, you know, I always think of it as like hiding a pill in applesauce. Like, you know, I can trick them into absorbing some social responsibility. What was I going to say? Well, anyway, it's
humor.
Great. Yeah.
Well, no, it's funny too, because I scrolled down and of course there's a woman in a bikini on the front page of GQ.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, there's definitely still some issues, but you know, I guess there's nothing, it's not like there's something inherently wrong with a woman being in a bikini.
No,
what you want to do is
just, you expect that and there it is.
Right. Oh, I know what I was going to say. It's that, when I got that job at GQ, the Return of Kings group lost their minds and they're like protesting, and they were so angry that a men's magazine would let, you know, a feminist write for them. And it's like, well, sorry, this is where we're going. My editors at GQ are amazing. They're smart. They're feminist. They're really, really cool. And they support me and let me write whatever I want, which is awesome.
Just quickly, do you get some good positive feedback from GQ?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, the reality is that most people are good.
Yeah.
It's hard to remember that sometimes on the internet, but it's true.
Lindy West is a Seattle-based writer, and she'll be a guest on Kamau Right Now tonight at 7 o'clock. If you're free, it's at the Swedish American Hall. Tickets are still available. Find more information, kalw.org. And you can also tune in tonight, KALW. Lindy writes for GQ. She also writes a column for The Guardian. And we hope to have her back when her book comes out, Shrill, Notes from a Loud Woman. Lindy, thank you so much. Thank you for using your voice.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produces the show, Malihe Razazan is senior producer, Matt Martin is executive producer, and Rosalie Atkinson is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and David LaTulipe is our studio engineer. Our theme music is performed and composed by Live Human. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.